Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor. The rise of the DIY investor, ease of access to investing via digital platforms, the rise of cryptocurrency and social media finfluencers. The landscape's changing pretty fast, and understandably, the regulators are stepping up. So this week, we're talking about money online. When is it okay and safe to do so, and when does it cross a line into something that only licensed financial advisors can do? According to the Financial Markets Authority, it's fine to talk about financial matters online, as long as you keep it general. As someone who talks about money professionally and just for fun, I'm keen to understand the rules in both spaces. Thanks to platforms like Sharesies and Hatch, access directly into share markets have been improved significantly, and this is awesome. But running parallel to the democratization of access is the democratization of financial advice, too. Everyday people, and not just those who can access qualified financial advice from licensed operators, can benefit now from a wide range of content that comes from international and local sources, qualified, amateurs, experienced, and brand new to the game. Perhaps this is the next generation of financial advisor, potentially in function, if not by name. Now, James Gregg is the Director of Supervision at the Financial Markets Authority, and he's my guest today. I wanted to cover off some questions that I had around some guidance published by the FMA on this topic of finfluencers recently. There's a link in the show notes if you want to check out more on that guidance. Now, before I start, if you're a subscriber to this podcast, that's awesome. Thanks very much. But also, check out the NZ Everyday Investor on YouTube. If you like shorter videos with the occasional graph and healthy dollop of opinion, check it out. Like all the videos, subscribe, and then make a cup of tea. Now, at the end of this episode, if you consume it or you're a social media financial influencer in some way, even just an active Facebook poster on investment groups, be sure to listen in to the end of this where I'll share a few more thoughts on today's topic. That's enough for me, though. Let's get started. Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. In this podcast, I cover a wide range of topics ranging from passive investing, property investment, and even crypto, all designed to help everyday Kiwis build new wealth in the new world that we're heading into. I'm Darcy Ungaro, your host and financial advisor. Hopefully, the content presented here gets you thinking about tools available to build wealth and the ways that you can use them effectively. Please keep in mind that none of this is financial advice. Investments or strategies discussed may not be suitable for everyone, so be sure to do your own research before acting on anything discussed today. Further information on today's show can be found by tapping or swiping over the cover art in your podcast player. Here you're going to find some show notes, which will contain all relevant links relating to today's topic. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is hosted on the podcast.nz network and is brought to you in partnership with Hatch, who lets you put your money to work in the U.S. share market. Hope you enjoy the show. So, James, what is it that you do with the FMA?
So I look after the supervision team, and we regulate financial services, which really means our licensed population. So KiwiSaver providers through to derivatives, as well as managed funds and so on.
Got it. Perfect. Okay. And today I wanted to have a chat with you guys because there's been a lot more stuff that I've been seeing coming out of the Financial Markets Authority, which I think is pretty cool. A lot of guidance, and a lot of that guidance has come from some changes in legislation that affect your financial advisors in particular, which obviously I'm a little bit tuned into, should be. I want to talk about this syndrome called finfluenza, or what it means to be a finfluencer. Being a social media influencer in the area of finance, because this is something that seems to be picking up steam. And you guys have put out some guidance around that, some stuff just to keep everybody safe. So at a high level, talk to me about what has happened. What has changed? How are people getting advice now? And is that evolving?
It's absolutely evolving. We've done recent research on this where we're finding that new investors are really looking at 4 to 5 different sources before they make an investment decision, which is great. So they really are consuming lots of different things and looking for different sources. And that's really a role we're seeing these new social financial commentators weighing in on.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily come from the traditional sources that you'd expect. It's actually coming a lot more from social media, isn't it?
That's right. And look, it's great to see all of these new people coming in. I think we've got 500,000 new DIY investors, which, you know, would have been is unheard of, right? And if you add that to the 3 million KiwiSavers, I mean, this is now record-breaking stuff, and we've never seen this many people actively involved in financial markets in New Zealand ever before.
And this is something that we actually want. We want that.
Of course we do. And you might start off doing a DIY, and then, you know, maybe that evolves over time, but actually the lessons you learn along the way are going to be hugely valuable. As long as you're playing with money you can afford to lose, which is probably the big caveat in terms of understanding that risk profile up front.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So in terms of the... some of the risks, and you kind of just touched on one of them right there, in terms of these DIY investors, this huge cohort of people that seem to have flocked in just recently, what would be some of the risks that newer investors in particular have that they may not have had before?
Sure. I mean, there seems to be a little bit of a FOMO, you know, the fear of missing out.
Yeah.
There's definitely been a herd mentality. I mean, things that are now making mainstream media, people jump in and want to be part of the action because they hear all these great success stories. Mm. Maybe the fear that I have is for every success story, how many horror stories are there as well coming through, whether someone's lost money or they've been victim of a scam. So I think it's really about the potentially it's the lack of diversity. When people are jumping on board with one investment only, they haven't really thought about the portfolio they need to diversify their risk.
Right, they're playing with the tools, but they're not actually thinking about what they're trying to build necessarily, right?
That's right. And also, if they're doing it with money they can't afford to lose. Hmm. And that's really the key here, which is for anyone who's going to be investing is, you know, what's the risk profile? Have they got a long-term investment horizon, or are they in it for a quick buck tomorrow? Yeah. I mean, that could be dangerous territory for some of the things that we're seeing in the market these days.
Yeah, I guess because the market has been fairly buoyant, you know, a little bit volatile, but it seems like we're still in this bull run of sorts. It kind of washes away the sins of ignorance to a certain degree, or it washes away these mistakes because... it didn't quite do what I expected it to do, but now I'm just going to be a long-term holder. So it's not as acute, the feeling of loss, right? Because it hasn't necessarily happened at a huge extent. It potentially could happen at any stage, and that's where it really becomes quite relevant, right?
Absolutely. And look, we did see through COVID where people were trying to jump out of their high growth or aggressive funds for KiwiSaver and trying to go into conservative funds. And then, of course, they tried to time the swing back up. And, of course, they've ended up missing out. They've locked in their loss on the downside and locked in the loss on the upside. Unfortunately, that's a little bit too much where people were trying to DIY, time it for themselves, and potentially are now worse off because of that.
When I first started getting into investment, it seems like there's this natural default understanding that when you're investing, you need to be kind of like this really clever trader rather than long-term holder. And I think maybe that's a common trait with newer DIY investors is that they do naturally have this default trading attitude rather than a long-term investing attitude.
That's right. And look, we are seeing research which suggests that people are looking to hold longer term in some cases, but different types of investors as well. So people who are trying to time the market for a quick return, or again, simply to be part of the action today. You know, maybe it's simply fun and they want to be part of the action.
So how does the FMA actually go about figuring out who a financial influencer or a finfluencer actually is? Because to me, I would assume that you would have to have people listening to you to start with to have any influence at all. But I guess all it takes is one person, in a sense, to actually listen to what you've said and make a decision, and then they get into trouble, right? So where is that line, and how do you kind of figure out, you know, when you're being a finfluencer and when you're not?
Sure. I mean, probably a couple of things on this one. So some of the work that we've been doing here is because we have had questions about, you know, people wanting to play it safe, and they don't want to break the rules, and genuinely we want to help them to stay within the boundaries. So that's the first thing. On the flip side of that, we have seen people who potentially have crossed the line. So again, highlighting that we've probably needed to say something in this space. So we do use social listening tools. We are out there looking to see what's around. And particularly if you've got lots of followers, then, you know, potentially you're going to be higher up the priority list for us to have a bit of a look at. But, you know, equally, it's a pretty broad place, the internet, and particularly when you're talking about commentators in various jurisdictions, we're not going to be able to look at each of those day to day, but we will take a risk-based approach.
Yeah.
If we hear about things that's coming across our radar, coming on the radar with complaints or inquiries, then we'll probably take a look and see what's going on.
Got it. So how does it actually work on the ground? Are there people within the FMA that are kind of just looking at these groups and they're actually being involved and just reading stuff? Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, so the social listening that we do, we are looking for things out there and statements potentially where it could be crossing over into advice, which is where probably the definition of advice, which is really relevant for the new legislation we've got. If someone's giving a recommendation or an opinion to buy or sell or not a particular financial advice product, that's where we're going to get interested. I mean, so someone who's giving, you know, commentary about something in general terms, that's great. You know, if they're doing something factual, that's great. You know, comparing, contrasting at a factual level, that's all fantastic and potentially brings something to the table for people to think about what might work for them. I think also where someone is talking about, you know, shares generally, that's fine. You know, investment strategies that involve shares or this or that or the other, that's all fine. When they start naming particular products or firms, that's probably where they're starting to cross a line into actually giving advice that they shouldn't be doing.
Sure.
Please pardon the intrusion. Now, quick shout out to a partner of the NZ Everyday Investor podcast and a platform that I use to access the U.S. share market, Hatch. Now, if you click on the show notes or you visit hatch.as/NZ Everyday Investor, and if you sign up for the first time, deposit $100, you're going to get a $20 credit free. That'll make your investing journey just a little bit easier. I've been using Hatch now for just over maybe 18 months, and they're awesome. Really easy to use. Check them out if investing in the U.S. is something that you'd like to make a start on. All right, let's get back to the show.
So for example, let's say someone is working out the intrinsic value of a certain company. There's probably nothing wrong there because it's just factual and they're just explaining how to use a calculation, right? Or if they are referencing what somebody said about Apple, for example, and then contrasting that with what somebody else says about Apple, that's not necessarily advice. They're just saying what other people have said, and they might pass an opinion on who they think might be right and wrong. But that's where it starts to get narrower and narrower when they start to express their own opinion around what they would do in that particular situation, right?
Yeah, if particularly if they're using the words, you know, I'm recommending that you do something as a consequence of whatever that other piece of information was, that could be getting into dangerous territory.
Right.
Particularly where if I keep it general and they're just comparing facts, that's fine. Yeah. But as they get more specific and it sort of blurs into something, you know, about an entity or a product, that's probably where it could be advice.
Yeah. And so when it's not necessarily a product, but more like a strategy, then that's kind of similar-ish, right? Because we're talking about almost a version of a financial planning service, right? Where you're providing guidance around how to go about doing something, right?
I mean, if it's in general terms, I mean, so for example, where someone says, you know, you should invest in shares. Yeah. Well, okay, well, that probably makes good sense as long as, you know, you're talking about a, you know, a long-term investment horizon and shares generally in the share market is going up.
Yeah.
Probably nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's where you start trying to build in personal circumstances for someone, that could be getting a bit more dangerous. Yeah. Or if you're taking money from someone for doing that, or if it's a one-on-one session, you're taking money from someone and you're getting into their personal circumstances.
That's pretty clear.
There's lots of red flags in that. But general statements about you should invest in shares or you should think about, you know, this widget or that, that's probably okay. It's it's as you get more specific, that's probably getting more dangerous.
Right. That's where it gets really interesting, right? Like when I'm doing this podcast, often we'll be talking about specific, you know, strategies in particular, right? And I have no idea who's listening, and, you know, try to put out the disclaimers that it's not suitable for everybody, it's suitable for some and all that sort of stuff. If I was to receive, say, an email from someone asking a specific question and I was actually answering that email directly to them using this forum, where does that sort of sit?
Yeah, look, I mean, interestingly enough, I mean, people can try and disclaim away this isn't financial advice, but actually they could turn around in the next breath and go, but I recommend you do the following. And
that's right.
So particularly where you're considering someone's personal circumstances, trying to answer a question potentially, that may be crossing the line. I mean, the other thing we find is because people are now in different jurisdictions, who knows where some of these people might be based. Yeah. The circumstances in that country or that jurisdiction may be different to New Zealand. Yeah. The personal circumstances or risk appetite of the person may be different to the person giving that response. Yes. I mean, this is where you know, you are starting to, you know, become financial advice. And the very reason why we want people to get a license and meet those requirements is because you're actually potentially, you know, you're giving them advice which they're going to act on, and that could impact on them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, that's really good. Now, what should consumers kind of keep in mind when they are under the influence of financial, well, when they're under the finfluence, when they're actually consuming content online or wherever, whether it's a blog, whether they're reading something in the Herald, whether they're listening to a podcast like this, what should people keep in mind in terms of what possibly is motivating the person on the other end to actually give that statement?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the first thing would be, is that person making money from that advice or guidance? So, you know, are there any disclosures or, you know, the tiny fine print that nobody reads?
Yeah.
Why is this person doing what they're doing? The other thing maybe to consider is, what jurisdiction are they in? So, you know, if you've clicked on something and it all sounds too big, too good to be true, well, maybe it is.
Yeah.
And maybe the other thing to think about there is, you know, unfortunately, there's lots of scams out there. You get sucked in by these great headlines, people chasing fantastic looking yields. And right. maybe the risks, even if it is legitimate, maybe actually wouldn't align yeah. with what you would be expecting if you understood the detail.
And I guess a couple of things that we can probably point people to would be, one thing that I can think of is the FSPR register, to make sure that they're actually, you know, they're actually present on the financial services provider register. And then the other thing would be just to check if there's been any mention, like there's something on the FMA website, isn't there, around whether or not something is a scam that you guys are aware of. Is that right?
Absolutely. Look, we do lots of scam warnings, and certainly I'd encourage people to come and look at the FMA website if you're looking to be getting involved with an yeah. advisor or a product provider.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, and the FSPR isn't this, you know, that means they're registered, but again, it's understanding what service they're actually performing. So make sure you actually have that conversation with the advisor as totally. To what they are entitled to totally. Talk to you about.
But things like, you know, if they're signing up to use a trading bot in the cryptocurrency space or derivatives, or there's whatever, there's, like you say, if it sounds too good to be true, just stop, do a little bit of research. And like, I've had a few clients approach me and just say, hey, you know, is this a scam? And usually when people are asking that question, 99 times out of 100, it's totally a scam.
If it sounds too good to be true, then, you know, buyer should be aware, right?
Yeah, cool. So tell me about this. Like, at the start of each show that I do, I always say, you know, this is not financial advice. And we kind of touched on this before, right? I know that in some instances, especially when I hear of people kind of saying, oh, I've done this because I read about it in this blog over here, or I bought shares in the company because I heard this person talking about that. And they wouldn't have talked about that unless they thought it was a good idea. So I've done it myself as well. Or I really like this person, so I just do whatever they do. How relevant is it to actually put those disclaimers out there? Like, I know it seems kind of obvious, but do you think people fully appreciate that when people are passing their own opinion on certain matters and they're just hopefully saying factual information and not giving advice, do you think people really appreciate that, hey, I can't really rely on this without doing my own independent research?
Look, people may not. I mean, it does get a bit confusing when, you know, you read something from someone who you like, and perhaps on other matters it's been fine. But where it gets into that dangerous territory is when it's actually potentially financial advice. Yeah. And, you know, you can't disclaim away the fact that it may be advice. I mean, it may be at odds, which opens up that conversation again around the risk profile of the individual. Were they receiving remuneration to promote a particular product or service that, you know, maybe wasn't disclosed? What jurisdiction are they in?
Yeah.
Again, if they're receiving money for doing what they're doing, then you'd have to wonder, well, hang on a second, you know, they're probably only going to give the one answer, which is the one they're paid to give.
And you don't think it's relevant that that person who's giving that answer, let's say they are clearly crossing the line, is it not relevant that they have no idea of who their audience is?
I mean, that's why we have the financial advice regime in New Zealand. If in the ordinary course of your business you're going to be giving advice, or you think you're going to be giving advice, I mean, you need to have a license.
Yeah.
And that brings with it the protections for retail investors in New Zealand. And that's why the regime exists.
Yeah.
For the people who don't get licensed or are operating maybe on the margins, and again, we'd rather have a conversation with someone to keep them safe and make sure they don't end up crossing the line that they perhaps didn't know about.
Yeah.
If things, you know, if they're getting more followers and they're wanting to push the boundaries, then, I mean, that could be a conversation that we have.
Yeah.
And look, I think for all of us who, you know, most people are going to be well-intentioned in their desire to help people create wealth. You know, the old term, mum and dad investors, everyday investors,
yeah.
or whatever term we use, you know, people becoming more aware of things that they perhaps would never have known about.
Yeah.
I mean, the numbers that I mentioned earlier, you know, for all these 500,000 DIYers or 3 million people now involved in KiwiSaver. I mean, those are staggering numbers that we've never seen being involved in financial markets ever before. Yeah. And the fact that they are out there consuming information from lots of services, different areas, is fantastic.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that people are going to be not losing money.
Correct.
But it means that they just need to be aware about the risks that they're actually signing themselves up
That's
for.
That's right. Okay, so now who enforces like the changes? How does it actually work? So someone messes up, right? Someone crosses that line and they clearly give financial advice. Who actually enforces it, and what can consumers do, or what can everyday people do if they spot someone doing that?
Yeah. Look, that's the role of the FMA. So if someone sees something which they think might be financial advice, or they've received something which they think is financial advice and they're not now sure about it, they should reach out to us and we can have that conversation. I guess the flip side of that is if you are a provider, whether it be Finfluencer or other, then, you know, if you think you're going to be in that space or you're not sure what the boundaries are, yeah. rather have a conversation and we can talk about the sort of the do's and don'ts as sure. we've been talking about today. Yeah. To make sure people stay safe.
Yeah. Okay. So James, like, I think about this in a couple of different ways, right? Like, there's financial advice in relation to giving guidance around disposing or acquiring of certain products. And then there is just financial advice, which is probably more along the financial planning side of the spectrum, right? Where you're actually helping people and guiding people to formulate strategies. So How does it work from a regulatory point of view? Because products are kind of easy, right? Anything, well, sort of. Any advice that's attached to that product, you can kind of monitor that. You know, are there fees, conflict of interest, is it suitable, all that sort of stuff. But when you start getting into more financial planning, which is a bit more of a spectrum depending on how detailed you go, how easy is that part to regulate from the Financial Markets Authority point of view?
Right. I mean, the heart of the new regime is really about putting, you know, the interests of customers first. And, you know, there is a new code. So, you know, and that lays out all the bits and pieces that, you know, advisors should have in their mind when they're dealing with customers,
yeah.
which is obviously key. There's also the disclosure aspect of that. So, you know, making sure that there's no conflicts and working through what that means. But also, the person giving that advice, actually, have they got the, you know, what's the level of knowledge and skill they bring to the table, which is obviously pretty critical,
yeah.
and also the nature and scope of the service that they're actually performing for that person. So, you know, what's the investment time frame and horizons, the risk appetite, all of the things you get from having a one-on-one personal conversation with someone about what they want. And that's the role of advisors when they're having those conversations.
I guess this is where it gets quite interesting, right? Because everyone is a financial advisor, but there's many different types. And that's where you do need to do just a little bit of due diligence. And hopefully that information is really clear when you're at least visiting the website. You know, their area of specialty is mortgages. Maybe mortgages and insurance, mortgage insurance, financial planning, or they provide a discretionary investment management service. Like, there's different stuff, but it hopefully will be quite clear. Do you think consumers appreciate the, I guess, the value of what a financial advisor does?
It's a really interesting question, and I wonder whether, you know, transitioning from the old regime where it was perhaps a little bit more murky as to who did what and, yeah. and all those the different terms. But, I mean, the real value that advisors can bring to the table now is around, you know, the key milestones in someone's life, and whether that be, you know, they're purchasing their first home or they're looking to have children or they're, you know, starting to think about their retirement and what that might look like in the future.
Yeah.
And it's that trusted relationship with someone over a period of time.
Yeah.
And we've certainly seen research that suggests that for those people who are prepared to invest in those conversations over time, they're more likely to be better off.
Yeah.
And whether that's simply a factor of whether they've spent the time to think about it or whether that's yeah. the relationship with the advisor or a bit of both. But actually, those people do get better outcomes over the long term.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so James, like, I'm thinking about the rise in the DIY investor. They're not just setting up with a hatch and a shares his account or invest now and just going for it. Some of them are actually getting some advice as well. They're doing it themselves, but they're trying to get advice so that someone is doing it kind of with them, or they're trying to reach out for some independent advice, which I think is fantastic, right? Because it's kind of like the best of both worlds. But I'm also aware that more and more Kiwis, and this is true certainly of the clients that I'm sitting in front of, more and more Kiwis are actually investing in unregulated products like cryptocurrencies. And with some of the cool research that you guys have done recently, 27.5% of people surveyed indicated they held crypto, and a further 6% considered holding crypto in the next 12 months. Do you find that kind of surprising?
Look, I really do find that pretty surprising. I think that that's a really, really high proportion. I mean, for people who are investing into that type of activity, I think they have to be aware of the risk profile of that type of thing. And obviously, we've heard all about the huge swings of those type of product, alongside, of course, the people who have been victim of various scams or issues with exchanges and issues overseas. So, Look, I think if people understand the risks that they're signing themselves up for, great. And as long as they're playing with money they can afford to lose, and they've done that in a considered way, and maybe if they learn something along the way, right? I mean, maybe this investment, if they've got a long investment time frame, is going to be right for them. Yeah. But it's for the people who turn around tomorrow and want to get their money out and are facing a significant loss of their capital, then that's going to be, you know, not great for them.
Correct. I sat in a webinar recently, and there was a question that was asked, which was, and it was all financial advisors who were in this webinar. The question was asked, how many of you actually hold cryptocurrencies? And it was interesting, because it was, of the people that were asked the question, I actually tallied it all up. It was 31.8% of people that were listening in on the webinar of financial advisors actually held crypto themselves, right? Which is actually quite surprising, I thought. But then when it came to the next question of how many of your clients actually held crypto or asked about crypto, 100%. So I found that quite fascinating, that there is a lot of demand or interest or intention to get involved in that space, but the sources of advice, the sources of personalized financial advice, they're not necessarily on board with it, which I think is interesting, because if a growing number of Kiwis are getting into that, all the more reason not just to allow people to sort of get behind the wheel of a very fast car and figure it out as they go along. I think it's critical that advisors actually get on board with this new stuff and actually figure it out and give people some guidance to help keep them safe if possible. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the role of financial advisors should be to try and keep people safe. And maybe that's a gap where, you know, the market is evolving quickly and we're seeing lots of different cryptocurrencies and lots of different types of investment out there. And maybe there has been a knowledge gap. Yeah. Where, you know, potentially people haven't quite got up to speed yet, or they don't themselves understand the risks, so therefore they're not recommending certain things because it's an unknown risk. And that in itself is probably a good thing, but maybe highlights a bit of a gap that things are evolving quickly and we need to try and keep up. But, you know, that's also where, you know, there's got to be knowledge and skill of the individual giving the advice and what is the stuff that they're actually allowed to or should be involved in. And that's where, you know, understanding what the investors want and what their risk profile looks like. I mean, it's not going to be something suitable for most people every day, because it's going to be in the high risk category. You could lose your capital. Yeah. You have to have the right time frame.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be the sort of thing that's going to suit a lot of people.
Do you own any crypto yourself?
No, I don't.
I know your CEO does, because he said so on a recent thing. Did you hear that? Dogecoin.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's right. It's out there, so I can say it.
Right.
Now, flipping on over to what it means to be a wholesale investor, we covered this recently on the show and some of the risks associated with that. It's not like you're buying your avocados in bulk, right? It actually means something a little bit different than getting a good deal because you're investing with a lot of money. So what does it mean to be a wholesale investor?
So wholesale investors are sophisticated and they potentially lose some protections that would be available to retail investors. So the first of which is going to be the code that is there for financial advisors and putting the interests of customers first or investors first. There's also some of the disclosure aspects and also nature and scope, and then finally would be around the knowledge and skill of the advisor that they're dealing with. So, I mean, a bunch of things there that, you know, you have to know what it is they're actually signing up for if you're going to be in that category.
It seems to be in certain areas, right? Certain types of investments. And I really don't want to pick on anything in particular, but just the only example I can think of would be unlisted commercial property funds, right? Where quite often it might be a wholesale offer. And I guess for as part of the process, there might need to be some sort of eligibility form that gets signed off on. What is that to start with? So if someone had to sign something to indicate that they were a wholesale investor and they met some criteria, what does that mean if someone's signing something like that?
So there's a range of different criteria that get applied in terms of financial requirements, and ultimately it's looking for that level of sophistication that potentially means that they don't need the protections that would be available for retail investors.
Right.
And there's certainly going to be some dangers in doing that if people don't understand the risks that are involved. I mean, in this environment at the moment where people potentially are chasing those great headline numbers, then the fear is that they don't actually understand the risks that go along with that potential return.
Right. So they could just simply have a lot of money and then have some experience in investing, you know, on their own, and then they would probably meet the criteria, right?
And that's really, really, it should be sophisticated investors.
Sure.
Okay. Yes, the dollars are there under different categories to try and define what that means, but right, it's really sophisticated investors.
Yeah. Now, coming from a financial advisor's perspective who can sign off on some of these forms, if you were an investor and you were looking to invest in something that was like that, where it was a wholesale offer and you needed to get something signed off by your accountant or a financial advisor, what's the responsibility on that person who's signing it off, whether it's an advisor or an accountant? What's their responsibility to ensure that they've actually covered off those risks?
Customers' interest should be first. So if that is at the heart of this new regime, which is about, you know, making sure we're achieving better outcomes for these, you know, investors, then
yeah,
I think the financial advisor's got to have that question in the front of their mind going, well, hang on, why am I doing this, and what are the outcomes going to be here for this person?
Got it.
So, look, I think that it's going to come back to, does this make sense? Am I doing the right thing?
Now, just in general, kind of wrapping that, or coming in for a landing here, are there any kind of high-level thoughts that you have around this, just this kind of financial revival of sorts that seems to be happening right now? Like a lot of people moving forward, interacting on these new digital platforms, investing potentially for the first time without any advice or guidance at all. What's your general vibe on that? You've kind of said before, yeah, it's quite encouraging to see that. But on balance, are you a little bit more concerned than you are optimistic about that?
I think it's exciting times. I mean, we've got new legislation which is allowing new types of advice. So the new regime allows digital advice, which wasn't allowed previously. You know, you had to be a natural person, and we had to create an exemption to allow for that type of activity, whereas that's now something which is actually built into this new regime. So with the new wave of DIYers and more people being involved in financial markets than ever before, I think it's pretty exciting that we've got different ways that are coming through in terms of digital advice and you know, things on apps and people weighing in with different pieces of commentary. I mean, that's all really exciting, giving people different source of information to inform them about the risks and opportunities that are out there. You know, if you want to DIY with, you know, something you can afford to lose, then that's fine. I mean, give it a go and learn the lessons along the way and get involved. And I mean, one of the things we're seeing is that people are not wanting to miss out, and they want to be part of the conversations and the chat round the table, so which is great. And if they're learning along the way, then maybe the next thing they do is they go to the next level and the next level.
That's right.
So, which is great.
Yeah, it is cool. So now, what is the FMA doing? Because I keep on hearing about stuff that you're doing, some really cool stuff, like the FMA Great Debate that was on just a couple of weeks ago. I found that really, really interesting, and it was actually just genuinely enjoyable to watch. And I'm curious to see that there's a lot more infusion within the market rather than we're the regulator over here, we're the participants over here. So what are you guys doing in particular at the moment with financial advisors around, you know, just helping provide a lot more guidance, especially considering we're in a new regime now?
Yeah, the key thing for us is making sure we embed this new regime. I mean, really, we want to make sure it is a success. We've spent a long time building and getting things ready to get people licensed. So the team is racking up some miles around the country. We're running workshops. We're engaging with entities to get them ready for licensing. Yeah. We've got a long list of guidance that we've published a number of things just recently, and we've got plenty more things in the pipeline as well. So key message here is around, look, if you're looking to get licensed, or you know, you've got a transitional license, then you know, we're here to help, and we want to get you that full license, but reach out early. Don't leave it to the last minute.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you very much, James. Really appreciate your time today. We've covered quite a bit of ground. Hopefully that was of interest to a lot of our audience. So really appreciate your time.
Great. Well, thank you for having me.
Awesome. Cheers. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, James Gregg, Director of Supervision at the Financial Markets Authority. I think it's a pretty common sense move by the FMA, to be honest, to provide more clarity around what can be a little bit gray at times. I can't say that I've seen too many cases of a blatant disregard for these guidelines, to be honest, but I will share something that I actually just randomly came across last week shortly. With most of the content, though, that I've read or heard out there, though, it appears people who share on financial matters either have a passion for it or they do it because it's ancillary to their main occupation, or maybe it's a combination of both. That's possibly where I sit, I suppose. It's hard not to get passionate about a topic, though, and perhaps that can spill over into the realms of being influential in some way. And that's the key, perhaps. When does the act of influencing someone become regulated financial advice? Like I say, there's more clarity, but to be fair, there's still a bit of gray to wash away here, I think. Or maybe not. Just to contradict myself for fun, perhaps we do need a bit of gray. Why not create a space for innovation here and a free market of sorts in the space of advice? If more Kiwis than ever are going to be investing now without traditional advice, what's worse, getting some guidance by a finfluencer or proceeding with no guidance at all? I'm not sure that line of thinking is entirely correct, but it's getting there maybe, I don't know. Now, many a finfluencer drops the not financial advice phrase willy-nilly, and yes, to an extent, it may seem kind of obvious, but in light of the harm that could arise if the wrong type of person did the right type of investment but at the worst possible time, I think we need to stick to it. So things are changing, though, and I think we should expect regulators like the FMA to keep an even closer watch on this space going forward. Now, I'll share an example of something I came across just last week. I'm not going to share the name because, to be honest, I think this individual is doing far more good than harm. Someone writes in asking for advice on what the finfluencer in question would recommend. Here's what the writer asks. We have $400,000 invested in an ANZ term deposit paying 0.95%. We're both retired at 75 years old and inexperienced investors. Could you please offer us your advice around a more fruitful investment? They go on to ask for an opinion on Fisher Funds and Milford Funds and ask the question, what portion of our investments would you place where and at what level of risk? So right away, I'm thinking, here's a specific request for advice. There's potentially the first issue right away. Why is an investor approaching someone who isn't qualified as a financial advisor for financial advice? I believe this is a financial advice question, specifically because they wanted to know about an investment product or strategy, that of a specific managed fund they named, and that of investing in managed funds versus term deposits. Anyway, it is what it is, I suppose, but the answer had me thinking even more than the question did. My thinking here, based on the guidance now issued by the FMA, is this, which again is much clearer, but perhaps not clear enough for this particular finfluencer who responds by saying, Fisher Funds and Milford Funds are advertised a lot. There's nothing wrong with them, but their fees are not low. I think some of the other KiwiSaver providers offer just as good returns with lower fees, so I wouldn't particularly recommend those two. Now, the people writing in disclosed some of their unique situation. They were 75 years old, they had funds in a term deposit, and they described themselves as inexperienced investors. Right away, I would have thought the response would have to be pretty general to start with. In fact, as per the guidance, the FMA provides this example of what's fine. Rather than trying to pick individual shares, you can put your money into managed funds that will be able to buy a range of investments. That's totally fine, and that makes sense. It's just stating a fact. And I'm sure by extension, it would also be perfectly fine to talk about the pros and cons of each strategy, perhaps too. But they then go on to say what wouldn't be okay to state. ABC Finance has a great managed fund that buys shares from around the world. They have low fees, so take your money to them. Now, the finfluencer here, who is not a licensed financial advisor, but still very knowledgeable about a range of concepts, didn't promote a specific fund that may influence the writers to choose. But they did pass an opinion around the non-suitability of two specific providers, on the basis that they offered a good return, but with a higher fee compared to others. Now, maybe I'm not getting this, but to me it seems clear that the passing of an opinion against something specific for something else is pretty close to the line, if not over it, right? In addition, performance of a fund should be more than just about returns and fees. What about risk, asset allocation, sustainability principles? But also, bringing this down to the everyday situation, I wonder also if this could be something to think about when chatting around the barbecue, when we can do that. If you provide advice to your niece around repaying her mortgage before investing, or your best friend about the best emerging cryptocurrency to acquire, I wonder if you need to think twice now and stick to the general stuff. There's two sides, right? Freedom of speech, I suppose, is on one side, and safety from harm is on the other. We'll seldom be static on that spectrum. Anyway, thanks for listening into all that. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to check out the YouTube channel in the notes and let me know if you have any requests for topics that you want me to cover there. Have a great week, everyone. Cheers. Thanks for listening into the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast, a show that's about helping you, the everyday Kiwi, build wealth. To learn more about the show, please visit nzeverydayinvestor.com or visit your show notes on your podcast player. There, you can find out how to make contact, sign up to our newsletter, and check out previous episodes. We're on a mission to increase wealth for everyday Kiwis. If you'd like to support what we do, then there's a few things that you can do. Write a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. Share episodes with your friends or support us financially on Patreon. Before we finish up, just another reminder that what was discussed today is for educational purposes only. Ideally, before acting on anything covered here, please contact your trusted financial advisor or do your own research. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'll catch you next time around.